What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Action Academy Podcast. Today's show is a special behind-the-scenes edition episode where you guys are going to see a live in-person call for the Action Academy community, the back-end community of podcasts. Once again, if you are a six-figure employee looking to become a seven-figure full-time entrepreneur, you want to learn how to scale your real estate, do the bigger deals, have direct access to the people that you hear on this podcast. This is an example of a call where we had about 80 people to begin, and everyone was able to ask Christian, who is the guest on today's call, questions directly. Afterwards, he stayed around, was able to answer specific deal questions, and he also pokes around our Facebook group and is active in there. So if you guys are interested in membership in the Action Academy community, you can go to the show description, book a call, find out more about it. Now, without any further ado, please remember this is a Zoom call. So not as structured as a normal call, but still so many nuggets within this episode. We have 20 minutes of pure multifamily knowledge. Great Q&A session at the end. Hope you guys enjoy. If you do, please share this with somebody that you think would get value from it. Thank you so much. So Christian, what we'll do real quick, for anybody that hasn't heard Christian before, he was on the podcast, one of the fan favorite episodes. We absolutely crushed it. And now we're on here today. What we'll do is we'll do probably about 20, 30 minutes of just a little directed, guided conversation. I'll ask him some general questions. And then what we'll do is we'll open up the floor to any and all people that are looking to get information, ask their specific questions. Remember, there is no such thing as a dumb question. He runs a group as well. They have a squad. They're doing creative financing. They're helping people buy their first properties. So they are familiar with absolutely everything. So when we get to the point where we're saying, hey guys, ask questions, just remember, go ahead and be thinking about it, so we don't have that awkward silence and I randomly start calling on people. So Christian, sup?
Yo.
How are you?
Good, dude. Long time no see.
Long time no see, man. Missed you. So, man, talk to the people. So, who is Christian Osgood?
All right. I am a multifamily owner. I own a few companies. I own Multifamily Strategy, which is our mentorship group, courses online. I own my property management company, which I'm sure we'll mention on here. That's no one do that. That's that takes a ton of time. Super low margin business. We opened that because there was no one in our market who actually do the property management stuff that we needed done.
Over and over.
Over the last 2.5 years, I scaled from 2 multifamily units. I had a duplex to, I have a little over 200 multifamily units right now and a seller finance resort. I did it with $0 because that was the budget that I had. And yeah, we just do a ton of creative finance. And if $0 is in budget for you, that's pretty much what I talk a lot about, is everything starts with the deal. All the money is found in the deal. The order of operations is going to be deal, then find the debt, then find the equity if you need to bring in a partner. But I keep everything really simple. I have a simple business belief, and this is not just for real estate, but if it's simple, it is repeatable. If it's repeatable, it's scalable. And any business that is scalable is a business that I'm interested in being in. So that would be my main thing today, is let's keep this super simple. And I'm only going to talk about stuff that literally anyone can do, because I'm not that smart and I started with no money. So I have the same pieces as everyone else.
Wonderful. And then what's the portfolio value at today?
We're a little north of 30 million.
A little north of 30 million. Anybody want $30 million for zero money down? Does that sound fun? Alan's in. Everyone's in.
Dan, all you need Dan's is like $21 million of debt. You're there.
Meredith's in. Meredith literally turned the camera back on. So she's in. Everyone seems to be pretty bought in. And then Nephi was over there having a freaking panic attack when you started talking. So he was just like, I saw his smile go immediately. All right, cool, man. This is super fun. First and foremost, let's talk about simplicity. So when you are looking at a distressed multifamily deal, first off, let's discuss that. We're talking about strengths and weaknesses. And so talk a little bit about our conversation on the podcast when it comes to you with distressed multifamily versus you buying your resort, because there's a lesson here.
Okay, so what you should be doing in your business, and you're not going to start out as the best in the world at anything, but the thing that you could be the best in the world at is what you should focus all your energy into. We found a niche where we are very good at repositioning entry-level housing. So like studios, one beds, two beds, nothing fancy. But we take fairly slummy properties and make them way nicer than all the surrounding properties. And I can charge under market rent because we have a lot of efficiencies. Same flooring that works everywhere, waterproof, glue down, LVP, looks really nice, really simple. The same interior paints everywhere, the same countertops. They're generic. They're very nice. They're up to date. They're way prettier than everything that we buy. And we can charge less than all the surrounding properties because we have enough scale where I can keep my costs down so I can profitably run a business, actually very profitably run a business, and help fight homelessness, give like reinvest into our communities. That is what we are just amazing at. We do that. We make money. I buy on very simple principles. Long-term, cash-flowing, fixed-rate debt. So I structure a debt product that allows me to cash flow day one, and the better I perform, the more I make. Whenever I close a deal, I get paid. And since it's long-term debt, I get paid for a long period of time. Like, it's not rocket science. We do it on repeat all the time. We bought a, I'll call it a class B+, but it is A+ location on the water, a place in Washington called the Hood Canal. My literal next-door neighbor is Bill Gates. His summer compound, we share a lot line. We have 20 cabins. They all have their own individual hot tubs, 12 and a half acres in the forest, foothills of the Olympic Mountains. You can literally see the orcas swimming in the canal from the cabins. Like what I'm saying, like this place is epic. It's epic. You would think that'd be a cool thing to own if you're used to converting entry-level multifamily. Turns out, I bought that for $0 out of pocket, $4.5 million seller finance deal. Turns out, hate running it. No efficiencies with my business other than I host 3 or 4 events there a year. Like, huge distraction for my team. We could easily be twice the size we are in multifamily instead of having to take all my best players and distract everyone trying to run a resort that we have no business running. We're good at it. It makes money. It actually makes a ton of money, but it doesn't make nearly enough money to distract from anything else that I have going on. That was my lesson there. Find the one thing that you can be the best in the world at. Just compete there and don't hop out of your lane until you're already just rich enough to do a new adventure. A year and a half into building my business was the wrong time to be like, you know what we need? Diversity. Hell no, don't diversify.
So guys, remember, a lot of you that are especially new, we literally were just talking in the pod leader chat where it is in the beginning of Action Academy, you guys are going to be brand new, head on a swivel, yes to everything. And that is okay. That is not shiny object. That is normal. In the beginning, you're going to go buy a 20 unit, buy a short-term rental, buy a mobile home park, buy a laundromat. You're going to do all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, you're going to find your niche and you're going to get in your pocket. And that's what Christian did when he started doing these larger distressed multifamily properties. Then he got into the pocket and he was like, ooh, I don't really want to talk to people. Like, this is where I enjoy and I thrive operationally. This is where I kill it. This is where I crush it and I can beat the competition. Then he got bored because it was working.
Yep.
That is shiny object syndrome. So in the beginning, your yes muscle takes you to the million. Your no muscle takes you to 10 million. So remember that and write that down if you guys are able to. Your yes muscle takes you to the million. Your no muscle takes you to 10 million. Because once you figure out what your thing is, then you go all in on it. And when you get really good at it, it's going to get boring. And that's when you're going to want to scale and you're going to want to try to do different stuff. Do not do that. So let's talk about your deal, debt, and equity framework. I love this, man. So let's begin with the deal. So when you guys are looking for a deal, there's a lot of people in here that are, you know, currently in multifamily. They're looking to do 20, 50, 100 units. Walk us through your buy box. Walk us through each section of this. So we'll start with the deals. What are you doing to find your deals?
So find my deals. Most of them are happening this way. Direct to owner, really simple model. I can't believe more people aren't doing this. So everyone who, like anything you want to do, someone's already done it for the most part, especially in real estate. Real estate has been around as long as we've had Earth, we've had real estate. So real estate's been around forever. People play the game a million ways. We know what works, what doesn't work. It's super basic to learn real estate. So I wanted to find people when I set my first goal. I think number one is actually defining what it is you're trying to build, because it's really easy to build a business and then look around 2 years after you've gotten there and look around and be like, this is nothing like what I wanted to get to. So map it out first. For me, I wanted to retire my wife. I wanted to build my house in Texas. I've lived in Washington my whole life. It's cold, rainy. Our politics suck, except for our Asian food. Our food sucks here. Everything is better in Texas for my style of living. I'm trying to get down to DFW. I just actually started building the house down there and I retired my wife 11 months into business. It took me 8 years to come up with a goal. And then it took me 11 months to actually hit the goal. And I was like, shoot. So step one, figure out what you want to do. Step two, find the people who've already done what it is that you want to do. In my case, I was like, okay, to have the income I want, I'm probably going to need about 100 multifamily units stabilized with my business partner, Cody Davis. If you guys have ever seen him, he's the most watched episode of all time on Bigger Pockets. He has like a couple million views on this thing. He's Cody done everything I've
own,
done.
Cody does his own thing.
Cody does his own thing. And Cody's pretty good with... Cody's now selling down a lot of his portfolio. His goal is to go from 200 to 100 units with less debt, which I think is a great goal. But my original goal, let's get to 100 units together. Let's stabilize it. That should be enough cash flow to hit all of our targets. So the next thing we do is we just met with everyone in the city we're investing in who has 50 to 200 units and asked how you scaled. And it's super easy. It's a relatable point. So you share, hey, I'm starting. I just bought one duplex and my wife got injured at school, trying to retire her and realized I can't do that one duplex at a time. You own a 20-plex, so I'm guessing at some point you realize one duplex at a time is not the way you're playing the game. How did you get started? And people answer one of two ways. One, they get excited that someone actually wants to talk to them about real estate and they just start spilling everything. Or two, they go, I'm not selling. Awesome. I just spent all my money on a duplex. I don't have any money. That's fantastic. Couldn't buy it if I wanted. I am trying to get to where you're at. The whole goal of that call is just to book a coffee meeting. I do, on average, 1 to 2 coffee meetings per weekend. I make one call per day to an owner I haven't met with somewhere in a market near me. And I just meet them and I learn about their strategy, how they got started, and what their goals are. And throughout the course of the year, making 5 phone calls, so it takes 15 minutes a week, and doing 1 hour of coffee every weekend, you meet 50, or if you're doing it twice a weekend, 50 to 100 people in your market where you've got to communicate in 45 seconds or less. This is who I am, what I'm trying to build. Can I learn from you? And ask them great questions. That has been most of our deal flow. The other thing that we do that's super simple, we just build relationships with a few of the best brokers. And that's easy. And that's, you can script for that 5 questions. That's not, we won't talk a bunch about that because that's simple. But like 40% of my deals come from brokers, 60%, and all of my best lowest down deals are from just building relationships with people and just saying, hey, I'm trying to build a business. You've already built it. What the heck did you do? It is the easiest thing in the world. And it takes incredibly little time to prospect for deals because they bring the deals to me. I've never asked for a deal in my life. Never asked anyone to sell before.
Perfect. So guys, sound familiar? Is this for me? Yeah, have you guys heard this before? So show of hands, who currently in your weekly habits for whatever asset class you're pursuing, who has the metric of I'm going to meet with X amount of people that are in my asset class. I'm going to speak to 5 local real estate investors, 5 local multifamily owners, 5 local self-storage owners. Who has that? Put in the chat, say yes, no. If you don't, this is where you start. I did the same thing as Christian, and I just spent 4 years, every single week, I did 2 coffee chats, and I need to talk about this more. For 4 years, to build up the initial network, which you guys now see today, 6 years later. And I did every single real estate meetup. So Hayden, who's actually, I think, Christian, you met Hayden before. Hayden's now being the star of the show. So now he's creating the meetup for people to come to. And that's bonus points. If you're that person, you don't even have to have hundreds of doors. You're the star of the show just because you're organizing it. Cheat code. So if you want to do that even more, go pick up. Last night, I was at Nick Gray's party. It's a 2-hour cocktail party. He has a book. Go read that book and do that in your market and invite real estate investors, and then you'll be the star of the show. Cheat code.
There's only 2 different strategies I've seen to really meet a ton of people and network really well. And actually, I think Brian and I are actually opposite personalities here. So this is a perfect example. You're either someone who isn't generally an extrovert, usually, but you're someone who is really good at connecting people. And so you are basically the glue between people, and you just get the right person to the right person. Relationships happen, and that's just part of your personality. It's who you are. You just have energy. You're crazy. The other thing that you do is more of the Alex Hormozi style. Do something completely uniquely epic, and then just talk about that one thing, which is mostly what I do. I'm like, you're not supposed to be able to buy 200 units without money. I did the one thing because it's what I wanted to do. And then it's, okay, I have one thing that I can do unique that other people can't. You talk about that. But those are the 2 things you can do to really, I found to really draw people in and share knowledge is either you are a connections person and that is how you're gifted, or you are really intensely focused on one thing. And those are the 2 different personality types that I think Hayden's starting to find this. It's like, Hayden, really cool guy. Yeah, he just closed like a sizable self-storage deal when I met him. Or he was either just closed or was just about to close. But an amazing connector. Like I met him just instantly. Found me. He's, oh, Brian, I know Brian. This must be Caleb. I've seen him on your YouTube channel. And he just brought a whole group into someone, like at an event. Those are the two skills that I see carry people farther than any other skill. Is either just intensity or the willingness to just connect with people and create community. Love it.
Let's punctuate with 2 points here, and then we'll move into debt, because debt and like equity and partnerships is what a lot of people are wanting in here. And then we'll start opening it up to more love questions. It. There's only 2 questions on this section right here. So the question number one, and Meredith asked, and a couple of people are asking, where do you find the people in your local market? How do you identify who the power players are in your local market? Number one. And then how do you actually reach out to them without looking like an absolute scrub? Because you can, I have 900 coffee chat meetings in my DMs and I'm never going to answer them because they're just half-assed. They're poorly done. They're generic. I'm not going to do it. So it's only the people that reach out and they say, and you did this, I think inadvertently, Christian, but you said, hey, I've got a duplex already. I'm doing this thing. I want to ask you about this and this. Can we meet this Saturday for 15 minutes? Yep. Then they're like, okay, this guy is doing stuff. He knows what he's talking about. Cool. If somebody were to ask me questions about something specific, then I'm more likely to answer. So question number one is how do you get with the seller and the people just like organically? The question number two is going to be that broker framework. Because you said it's super simple because you've done it thousands of times. There's people in here that are maybe nervous to reach out to that first broker, or maybe they're confused about why a broker is not forming the relationship with them that they thought.
Okay, so first step we'll start with finding the owners. Found a magical map online that has every single property. And it was called Google Maps. And you're able to look down on Street View and you're like, oh, shit, they have all the buildings. Turns out satellites can see most of them. Multifamily in particular, and basically any asset class, actually, is usually all grouped together because of city zoning. So a lot of your self-storage is usually going to be in a few areas of town just based on zoning. Same with hotels, whatever. You can find for free anywhere, with the exception of LA County, has some different rules. But basically everywhere in the U.S., you can hop on the county assessor site and you can just connect with anyone by looking at who owns it. If it's an individual, Google their name and the area that it's in with the word phone number. If it's an LLC, dump it into a free site like Open Corporates or True People Search. It'll say, hey, here's your governors of the LLC. Go call them. You can connect with just about anyone that way. When we launched multifamilystrategy.com, if you guys have ever seen Brad Lee, he's an influencer online out of Vegas. He owns Lightspeed VT, which is the platform that we wanted to use. And I just looked up his number based on a business that he owns. Googled the name Bradley, Las Vegas, phone number. Found the last 4 digits, plugged it back into Google with the last 4 digits, and it filled out the rest. Gave him a call. He helped us launch our course. I had a sales question. We got a hold of Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street, same way. I looked him up. There's like 20 numbers for him. I typed them all into my phone. The one that lit up blue, I was like, hey, look, it's an active iPhone. So I just gave him a call and he was like, what's up? It's Jordan. I'm like, no way. It worked. You can reach anyone this way. They can be a celebrity. They could be a mom and pop person. I have a YouTube video on our channel, Multifamily Strategy on YouTube. I think it's like our 10th most watched video. It's a big pink background. You can't miss it. It's 8 minutes of us just finding property owners. It's super easy. Works everywhere in the with the exception of Los Angeles, very specifically.
Yeah. Just double dial. That's another thing is because most people aren't going to answer on the first dial. Just double dial.
Oh, yeah.
You'll get through. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So easy one. And now the broker framework.
Yeah. And really, I'm going to add one thing to this. So once you make that first call, actually, I challenge everyone. Go to my YouTube channel after this, Multifamily Strategy, and watch our first videos. We never deleted them. They suck. We also own no real estate. We got on a video and said, we're going to go do this. I think it's the sexiest thing you can do. Call your shot, like publicly before you make it and just keep it up. You can watch two idiots. I'm like, I own 2 units. I'm going to quit my job and buy a bunch of shit. And Cody's, I own no units. I'm going to do this thing. And here we are 2.5 years later and we have a 30,000 subscriber channel. And it's, hey, we actually did the thing. Sexiest thing you can do. So one, go ahead, call your shot, what you want to do. When you reach out to people, you just need to map what you're trying to do. You have 10 seconds, way less than that. You have 5 seconds to give them a reason to not check out on you. So on the phone call, just call. Hey, it's Christian. I was actually calling about your property here. Their defenses are already going up because they're going, my property. I'm your property neighbor. Or, hey, I'm an investor in your market. I had a question about your property. What everyone will do wrong, do not call and tell them what you're not calling to do. I hate it when people go, hey, I'm not trying to buy your stuff. I'm like, I don't give a shit what you're not trying to do. Tell me why you are calling. Give them a reason to listen to you. And then your only mission is to book a meeting. If your phone calls go in 10 minutes and you think you're in rapport and you're doing a great job, you've screwed it up and you're not going to get a meeting. Get on the phone, get a relatable point, ask them a question, book a meeting, get off the phone. This should be like a 1.5 minute call. It should be super fast. They're not your friend yet. You just want to get coffee. That's how you run that. So brokers, scripting. Be a human, have small talk in here, but there's 5 basic questions I ask every time. This is the roadmap. I'll just give it to you right here. First question, don't forget this. Is the property still available? People forget to ask that and you get into a rhythm and they go, oh, it's already, you ruin all your momentum. If the property has already been snatched up, it's already gone under contract. It also just preps them, like they're salespeople. So you're getting them spinning on, oh, I'm now comfortable. I know what the heck we're talking about. It's this property, this area. By asking, is it available? You're basically saying, hello, I'm a potential buyer and I'm calling you and let's start talking transaction. So number one, is it available? Number two, generic question. You want them to end on, you are the most logical buyer for this property. You haven't established that yet. So you are going through the sales psychology of, I want them to want to sell me this property. So I ask something super open-ended, generic, and just let them be a salesperson. Great example. Hey, I invest in this market. I haven't bought in this neighborhood yet. What can you tell me about this neighborhood? Now they get a chance to sell you. They now want you to be a buyer for this. So you're letting them do their job. Now we want to get a little bit specific. And number three, I like to ask them something that they don't like about it. If you could change one thing about the property, what would it be? Or, hey, this has been on market for 200 days. Do you know why it hasn't moved? One, I'm testing to see if they're going to lie because you can almost always tell. No, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, it's been on the market for a year. There's something wrong with it. I get to test that, but more importantly, I'm going from generic to specific. It's just a natural progression. It's basically just a psychology question. We stick it in there to transition to my favorite question, number four. How's the bank going to look at this deal? That asks every single freaking question that you have left. If the roof is bad, you're going to need to put more down. If the pipes and if the electric's not permitted, you're going to have an insurance problem. You're not going to get bank debt. If they have terrible bookkeeping, the bank's going to want to see either more down or they're just going to say no. The other thing that this does is now you went from property to the money. It is a normal, like their sales reps, they're hearing, okay, they're now asking how we're going to finance this. Like it is, you're going through a real sales transaction with a real salesperson. Everything is flowing in order. You've now established, I'm interested. This property fits whatever criteria I gave. And we're talking money now. My last question, and I'll use this as a transition, is just, are they open to carrying a contract? Because when I started, I didn't have any money. Seller financing is not the only way, but it is a fantastic way to buy things no to low money down. They don't have to answer yes or no, and you're not going to sell them on it. If they're not open to it, they're not open to it. If they're not open to seller financing, there's nothing you're going to say to convince them to. But if you open your conversation with, hey, I'm looking for properties I can pick up seller financed, you're basically saying, hello, I'm Christian. I'm broke. No one is interested. Just ask that question. If you want to build a relationship with them and this property is not the one you want to buy, but you just want to open up a relationship, swap out the, are they open to carrying a contract with, is this the deal that I should be looking at right now based on what I've communicated to you? And they'll probably be like, yeah, what do you mean? Is this what you want to buy? And so, this fits a lot of my criteria. But if you're me, do you have anything else coming up off market? Or is this the deal that I should be doing with you? And that establishes yourself higher up on their list of people that they're going to send deals to. They're like, I talked to this person. They asked good questions. They were efficient. And they seem like they can buy property. That is how you move to the top of a broker's list. Broker script, 5 questions, super easy. Ask them in order. That's your straight line. Or A to B, dude, building broker relationships works every time.
That was money. Guys, how was that? That was freaking money. And you had such subtle nuances in there that I really want to hit on, because there's these different zones of competence. So you're like, right now you're in the unconscious competence. So you're in that side of it. So there's a couple, and that's why I have a podcast, right? I'm like, okay, hey, you're really good at this thing, but you don't understand that you're good at it. So let's like translate this. So you, the first question that you said was really important. I buy in this market, not in this neighborhood. So you're like, I'm a buyer, but just not in this neighborhood yet. Instead of just saying, hey, what do you got? So no, I'm in the market. And then the other one was, are you open to carrying the, are they open to carrying the contract? Not just, hey, Christian, I'm Brian. I saw this property. Would they be open to seller financing? First email.
The answer is no to that every time, by the way. Every no time. One ever says yes to that. You're just like, hey, I don't have money, but do you think I could try to buy this? No. It's a piece of real estate, man.
So now, guys, I want you guys to direct where we take this. We can take this lower level. We can take this higher level. Where do you guys want to take it? Because I know a lot of you multifamily folks are in different stages. You're at like the 20 unit, 50 unit, because now we're talking debt and equity. So what do you guys want to know about creative financing? We can do show of hands. We can do however we want to do this, because I really want to make sure that you guys are served on this one.
52 people. We should have something.
I've got a question.
They will. This is how it always goes. Hayden starts it. Somebody starts it. And then there's 9 million hands that are raised.
Yeah.
There we go.
Cool. And you guys, you can post it in the chat too if you want to.
Do you want me to just put it in the chat, Brian?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Is there a way to pierce a trust? I've seen several properties that I'd be interested in, but it's in a trust. And sometimes they have the person's name on it, so it's helpful because I can go and skip from there. But sometimes it's like land trust number 249,020.
Yeah.
Is there any way to get past that?
No, and there's a good reason for it. Well, I mean, yes, but it's hard. And the reason for it is like, people who are just not open to meeting, like some people are done. They've built their business. They're totally passive. It is secured. They are just not someone who's going to meet. The nice thing is if they're super hard to find, the odds of you actually booking a coffee meeting with them are low. Now, the benefit here is when you are the person that they meet with, they're not meeting with a bunch of other people. So if you get that relationship, it's worth like 100 other relationships. And we've had that happen. Generally speaking, if it is absolutely buried in a land trust and their name's not on it, the best way to do it is you can usually find what lawyer contacted it and you can just ask them to pass a message. That's about the best you can do. You just go, hey, I saw you were involved in filing this. I have a question for your client. If you could pass along my contact information, I appreciate it. It's in regards to this property. They probably won't get back to you, but if they do, we've had it happen before. That's really the only way you pierce those. They are designed for anonymity. I have two LLCs where there is no freaking way you are finding me. They lead to another LLC, which leads to another LLC that was filed by the prior LLC. There's a couple companies I just don't want people to see in case I get sued. So I don't want you to know that I own them. That will happen occasionally.
Hey, and I'm not sure unless it's like a very specific property that's adjacent to something that you're doing that it may be a waste of time barking up that tree.
Yeah.
If you're spending a lot of time on that. You know.
If you see a contact on there, my motto is you see a contact, make a contact. If there's an email for a lawyer, just pop out a 2-sentence email. Hey, man, I had a question on this property I actually own nearby. If you could pass a message to the owner, I appreciate it. Thanks, Hayden.
Yeah. I do it the opposite. I do all of this the opposite way as you. I don't do phone cold calls. I do emails. So all my stuff is through email. The shorter the email, the better. It's the same flow. Everything I do is via email. So I'm reaching out to so many people, shooting emails saying, hey, this is what I want. Can you help me with this? So what
less
we'll do,
is more. Phone or email, less is more.
So Nephi, we'll hop on with you. And then what we'll do, Christian, a lot of people are asking about like deal structure. So I think that right now there's like some confusion about what questions that they should be asking right now, because this is that point of the call. So after Nephi, let's just go from start to finish a couple of your deals and how you went about structuring them like throughout the entire deal. Is that good for everyone? Thumbs up. Okay. There we go.
Just the two we're going to share.
We hit the nerve. All right, Nephi.
Hey, Christian, I love what you're doing. Thanks for coming on. And creative just makes so much sense to me right now, especially like with the interest rates and where they're at, and not just like for multifamily, but really for any and all asset classes. I think your strategy would work really well, not just for like apartment buildings, but even for businesses, just like all the asset classes. And yeah, looking up phone numbers would be the same with each one. So I think there's this guy that I'm following right now, and he is really big into creative, but he, for the most part, just like cold calls and on the phone call, just asks about creative. And I'm just curious about your opinion of that versus the long game that you're doing, where you actually sit down with people. And it sounds like you don't actually cut straight to the, hey, I want to purchase your property owner finance, right? You just get to know them. You become aware of them and their problems. And I guess when the opportunity is right, you just present this as a solution. Does that sound right to you? Or I guess, I don't know.
How many guys have you met with where you didn't lead with an ask, you just led with value, you led with friendship, and then they brought you the deal from somebody else?
That would be almost all of them. And it is usually they bring me the deal from someone else. A lot of times when you meet with a larger owner, the call that comes in a month, 2 months later is, hey, I just thought had of a you. Deal come up. Yeah, and you've shared your pieces. Hey, I've spent all my money on duplexes, so they know that I'm not liquid. Here's what I am good at operationally, but here's what I'm trying to build. And you want to share some significance. So for me, like it was authentic, but it's retiring my wife and starting a family in Texas and all the things. Like it actually matters when I achieve that goal. And so that anchors that in their head of, hey, when I help this person, I'm not just helping someone buy real estate. I'm helping someone start a family. Like it is different when you communicate your story really well. But in those conversations, like, so a lot of times they'll just call you and say, hey, this deal's too small for me, but I think this is perfect for you. And I think you can get seller finance terms. This is how I go after that. I get those a lot. We have had on the long game, there's two or three guys who you get to a certain point in real estate, you have more money than you have time. And at some point, usually their kids don't want the real estate. Like a vast majority of the time, they have no interest in real estate. So I've had guys who are like, hey, I don't want to just pass more cash to my kids. I'm trying to set up income streams. And my CPA says it's time to start getting out of the game. So that's when we come in. They're like, would you like to buy a few of the properties? That is when you can have an ask. When they bring up a transaction, we went to their office. They have 200 units. I was like, I would like to buy a few of your properties with the caveat of, if you're willing to carry the contract and that's actually how you want to structure this, what if we bought all of them? And they said yes. And so over the next 5 years, they're transferring their 200 units to me. They brought up the concept. And when they said, hey, would you like to buy 50 units? I was like, why don't we just buy all of them? If you like the way I operate, because I operate the way that you taught me in our meetings, if you will let me take your portfolio to the next level, to the next generation, I would be very grateful. It means a lot to me, and I will not screw this up. And we've had that happen two or three times. So I have two or three people with hundreds of units who just have a plan, and their retirement plan is give Christian all my stuff where it cash flows.
That's a great plan.
Huge thing Christian just said that I don't want you guys to gloss over. When you're meeting with a big player, talk big, because they will get invested in you and want to help you because they will recognize you as somebody that is like them. For instance, example, if you go meet with somebody that has 200 doors and you get the coffee meeting, do not tell them that you're trying to buy 3 units this year. You see what I'm saying? Tell them, I want, like Christian said, I'm not looking to buy another duplex. I am looking to retire my wife. I want to make sure that she is okay. She is completely out of the game. I'm looking to speed this up, because once you do this, then they'll be like, oh, I recognize this. And high performers are only attracted to high problems.
Yes.
Period. Period. They do not want to help you buy a 4-unit. But a guy with 80 units or 800 units will have a 40 unit come across his desk that's too small for him. But he will not even think about a 4-unit. I hope that makes sense, because I get those deals too, and I have to pass those on. So it, and that's from like years ago, that I still get those deals from the relationships formed years ago. Sweet. So Christian, let's go over a couple of deals from start to finish. You got the deal at your desk and you said, okay, cool, we're here. How did you go about the negotiation process? Let's just work through a couple of deal dives. And I think that the questions will begin to materialize once people are more into the deal.
Yep. First deal is a perfect example. First deal, 38-plex. I have no money. Cody has no money. We both have a net worth. Yep. No, we both own a little bit of real estate. I own my house and 2 duplexes at this time. Cody owns 30 units at 21 years old, because he's a freak. And we have some net worth. I think we're probably both worth about $400,000, but zero liquidity. Absolutely none. Cody had $3,000 in his bank account, and we didn't spend the $3,000. So when we put this together, this was on market for 12 years. This was an actual distressed property. There was a homeless camp on the back of it, and there's a chicken infestation. Like, there's chickens everywhere. It was insane. And this is not like it wasn't even like a farm area. It was just a multifamily building chickens. That had a shit ton of chickens. So there were some problems with the building. It had been on market for 12 years at $2 million. And we looked at it and we're like, okay, average unit in this market goes 120 a door. This is 38 units for $2 million. There is a way to get this worth a heck of a lot more. It's just losing a ton of money because they have no collections. They're bringing in $5,000 a month on 38 units is what they're collecting. We wrote a deal that had very low monthly payments, seller financed, because there's no bank that would buy it and no one was going to buy this for $2 million cash. The only way this would ever trade is seller financed, and they happen to have paid it off because they've owed it for 50 years. So when we came in, we gave them $300,000 down. We didn't have $300,000, so we brought in three equity partners. Each person brought in $100,000. That fully funded the deal. Everyone got there. So there's Cody, me, and three investors. Everyone got 20% of the deal. Washington State excise tax will get you. So, like, in retrospect, don't give more than 50% of your deal in this structure, because when you buy them out, it's really expensive. But what we ended up doing, they bought in 50%. 60% of the deal goes to them. We have a buyout for each of them, 2-1 in 5 years, which gives us 5 whole years to get this thing performing where it should be, and out of a cash out refi, buy them out. So that seemed like a good structure. There were two problems with it. One, outside of giving too much equity. One, we ended up wanting to refi it in 11 months, but we wrote a 5-year buyout option. So when we bought them out, which we did do out of a refi, we had to pay them. We doubled their money in 11 months, borrowing at over 100% interest effectively. It's expensive. The good news is we've cashed out $2 million from the property. So while it cost us $600,000 to get rid of them, the property paid us over $1 million. So the good news is we had a deal that was good enough to overcome our stupidity. The other thing that we would change in structure there is I would have raised more money up front. We raised enough to close the deal, not to rehab the deal. We fixed the collections. We did them one unit at a time out of cash flow. What we learned is that is a real, like, vacancy is what kills
rough.
It takes so much time and so much money. I would have raised 600,000 and paid them nine. We had to refi twice to pull capital out, buy out the partners, do the next phase of renovations. Then we got the collections higher. We got new exterior siding, new windows. And then we refinanced again to go do the parking lots and the roof. And if you have seen the cost of doing refis, we lost a lot of money and time restructuring and then restructuring and restructuring. That being said, if we only did this deal, our last appraisal was for $4.1 million. And that was before we finished all the renos. Cody and I would both be millionaires just because we did one deal. And we've done 15 deals since then. So good deal. The structure worked, but we made mistakes. The best structure we ever did, and this is way simpler. 12-plex needed 150 down. We had just bought a hotel that we were converting to multifamily. So Cody and I had zero capital that we could contribute because we just spent it all on a piece of real estate that we own, just him and I together. Partner comes in on this one. They want to go 50-50. They put in half the money as their equity. They lend Cody and I half the money as our equity. This helped because we ran what's called a cost seg study. For you people who are more advanced than multifamily, ran a cost seg study.
No, cost seg.
We get bonus taxes. What I didn't know, and what everyone might not know, is inside versus outside basis. If you buy a deal zero down and your investor brings all the money, you get to claim the write-off on your tax. Or it's like it shows up as money that you claim, but you don't get to write it off against more than you have put into the deal. So if you personally put $0 into the deal, it will roll over into next year. It's your tax benefit, but you actually can't use it. We learned that after we paid six figures in taxes that we thought we weren't going to, because we bought all these things zero down with an equity partner. If you structure it as debt, it is now your money you're putting into the deal. So if they lend us half and we're 50-50, in the eyes of the IRS, every partner has even money in. The capital accounts are completely balanced because your money, you own 50%, you put in half the money. They own 50%, they put in half the money. It is the best structure for tax benefits, for simplicity. And when you bring that to your CPA, they're probably going to kiss you. It's a perfect deal. You spent no money out of your account, but you have enough money into the deal to back your equity. It is a perfect deal. It is super simple. and it's very basic, and it splits up the debt and equity. All you have to do that is make sure that you have enough cash flow in the deal to cover your half of the debt. And if you don't, maybe you give them 70% of your deal and you do 30 and you borrow your 30. But if you match the amount that you borrow to the amount of your equity, it is the best way to structure a zero down deal with a capital partner. Hopefully
any
that
questions?
Helps.
Any questions on that one, guys?
If that was too high level, DM me, Christian Osby. I will.
No, we're going high level. We're going high level, brother.
Okay, let's do it.
Because this is the good stuff. So that was going to be a question that I had, is debt versus equity. Like, at what point, and is there a max equity that you would issue? Is that no more than 50% or more like 30%?
Yeah, no more than 49.9%. Because every deal I do with a partner, I have an option to buy out. My goal is to own the real estate, but you can't own the real estate if you don't have enough income from the real estate. Like, I have to do the projects to make the money because I make my money in real estate. So for me, it's okay. I can get the project where they want to go in 5 years. So I structure a lot of things that have, now it's a tiered buyout. I'll double your money in 5 years. Or if I buy you out in year two, you'll maybe get a 1.5. And so you'll get a little, you know, it's cheaper for me in the long run, but you get a better return in respect to time if I buy you out early. Like, I'll do stuff like that. And my contract's really common. But we'll set up a system where it's like, I can buy out every single one of my partners when the deal does what it's supposed to do. And at the end of the day, the rule is the real estate needs to buy the real estate. It's never, I'll buy out this partner because I'll earn the money enough elsewhere to have an option to buy them out. It's, I'll be able to refi. And at that time, I can get them off the deal. They get their return. And if they want to invest with me again, we'll re-roll their brand new capital into the next deal. It's a good way to expand. It's a good way to encourage expansion. I've also had clients that are just like, I want to buy my own deal now. And they 1031'd out of me buying their half out. They're like, I got a tax-free exit where I doubled my money and then bought a bigger deal by myself. All options.
Anybody have any questions on the equity splits before I continue? Because I'll keep going. I love this.
And by the way,
I eat this for breakfast.
Use debt before equity. It's deal, then debt, then equity. You want
that's
going to
be my next question. Yeah. Yep. So then what are your normal debt terms? Because these are your equity terms.
I have debt right now. This is going to, people are going to, there's going to be some assholes,
I got it,
fucker here. So I have debt at 3% and I have debt all the way up to 18%. And all of it cash flows. All of it is on deals that cash flow. I have borrowed $700,000 at 18% because I got my deal closed without me spending any money, and the deal will pay for the deal.
Is that hard money?
It is. No, it's an equity partner, but there's penalties if I don't hit the buyout. It's actually illegal to, you can't have a mandatory buyout option. An option is an option. If you make the buyout mandatory, it's either considered debt and it's not equity, or you're creating a security. And I don't syndicate. I don't want to create securities. I don't want to have a mandatory buyout. Options versus obligations, I'll take options every day. However, if I don't pay that one off, they get a huge chunk of my equity. So you can have if-then clauses, like, I can buy you out. And if I opt not to buy you out, then you get a large portion of my equity, which I don't want. So I have very expensive debt, which, of course, you can refi or pay off. And that's the first debt that you pay off. And I have very cheap debt. I have millions of dollars of debt, sub 4% seller financed. So debt terms are very simple. It has the cash flow and long-term fixed rate debt. That's all I really care about, because when I close the deal, and I consider long-term like 10 years, because you'll go through a full market cycle at least in 10 years. So it'll be an optimal time to exit the debt if you want to. But I want to know that my variables are fixed and my costs are fixed, because in a 10-year period, incomes will go, like, your income will go up. But if you fix your expenses, it will just be doing better in 10 years. That's just how real estate works. So that's something.
Is there a DSCR that you're looking for?
I maintain a portfolio DSCR of 1.5 or better at all times. And we're actually dangerously close to 1.5 because I'm converting a hotel right now. So it's half leased. But if you take projects, like part done projects, out of the portfolio, we sit at like a DSCR of 2.
That's huge.
I like cash flow.
I can tell. Guys, are you tracking with DSCR? Do you want us to hit on DSCR? Everyone good? All right, nodding. Okay, cool. So same thing with James Richardson. Caitlin, do you remember what James's target DSCR is with the business acquisitions? I think it was like 1.5, 1.7. It was 2, Michael? Yeah, Two. Okay, so he was aiming for two. So you're getting the same debt service coverage ratio as James is when he's buying small businesses. So that means that your deals are cash flow like freaking crazy, dude.
And a lot of them are heavy value add. So you pick them up where they're like, it's okay, it's 1.3 today, but in 5 months, I'm going to fix the collections and we're at like a two. So
okay, sweet.
Being an operator is an important part of that.
So I'm taking full reins of this call because everybody's giving me these nods of approval. So I'm taking this over completely and I'm going to have fun now.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So
fire away.
My name's Brian. I get a freaking $2 million deal on my plate tomorrow. Somebody was stupid enough to negotiate with me and they said, you know what? I'm open to carrying a contract. I say, holy shit. I don't have any private money, any hard money. I don't have any of this lined up. I need to figure something out to get this deal done. I need to like structured debt. I need to go figure this out right now, but this will get the deal done and it will cash flow. What do I do?
Okay. First things first, you have a deal. So your deal has to go under contract. And the nice thing is you have feasibility. Deals don't close tomorrow. So you don't have Correct. The money. That's fine because you don't have a deal. You ink the deal and now you work on, okay, so what's the debt? So the first piece, seller finance debt. So they've already said they'll carry a contract. We got to figure out what it is they're trying to do. So are they trying to take as much cash as they can out, but they know that it's not going to sell without these terms? You might need to put a little bit more down. If they're just like, hey, I don't really need a lot of money right now. I do want the income stream and I just really want this off my hands. Okay, awesome. You have more flexibility. I'm going to make sure that I have as much cash flow as I can get. So I'm going to ask for the best terms that I possibly can within reason. But the more you can figure out from them on what they want, the more you can tailor the deal. The deals need to be simple.
Sorry, continue.
No, I was going to say, deals need to be simple. So don't get too crazy in special clauses. But like a great example is there's a deal where I'm like, there's no way to cash flow this unless I don't pay a mortgage for the first 6 months while I raise the rents. And so that's the negotiation. That's one of my mentees, Caleb. Yeah. Caleb structured one of his deals this way. Caleb invented this. I call it the Hommel hack. Caleb Hommel. He bought a deal. It wasn't going to cash flow for him. And he's like, if I don't pay the mortgage for 6 months, this deal will work because it will give me the reserves I need. So he just wrote it in his note. We'll do 5% interest only. I'm going to pay you $100,000 down right now. And in 6 months, I'll start paying a mortgage. That made his deal work. So when I say simple, simple. It hits their goals and it works for your goal, your property where you're going to cash flow all the way through. That's a good example of it. I'll figure out the debt product. If there is a lot of cash flow day one, I'm going to do it as debt. If this thing's cash flowing 15% cash on cash, I know for a fact I can go out and borrow 12% money, make a 3% spread, finish my project, and then bring this into 7% debt. And I'm just going to kill it. Like, super excited about that. If it cash flows like 3%, but I have a path to double the value of it, exactly like the 38-plex, it breaks even day one. And it's a huge hassle. But I'm buying it for two, and the last appraisal is for $4.1 million. So like I have $2 million of upside. Additional debt is not going to be supported with no cash flow. That's not going to happen. So you bring in equity partners to buy time. The important thing to remember is equity is more expensive than debt. Almost every time.
It's the last resort.
No one's going to come and be like, I'll make 12% on this, but I'm not going to see any payments, and hopefully they don't default. No one's going to do that. It's going to cost you a 20% increase average on their money. Like for me, double in 5 years is something that is a good metric a lot of people will accept. But you're talking like, okay, so you're averaging like a 20% increase every year. That's pretty darn good. Equity is expensive, but it gives you time. If you have a lot of cash flow, deal debt done is better than deal debt equity. That's every time.
Talk about when you're getting a deal on the hook right now. Talk about which ones do you focus on first between like price duration and terms, like price rate and terms. Which one are you wanting to hammer on first? Let's pick one. So like the way that I view it is I'll give you the price that you're looking for, but on my terms and my duration. Is that how you view things or is it just deal dependent?
Price is one thing. Terms are everything. Price is probably, if you have the option, which I rarely do, price is the best one to negotiate because if you borrow less money, your seller financing terms are just, like you have more cash flow. In addition, price allows you to refinance and get all the conventional debt that you wouldn't have in term. So price gives you the most flexibility because every single negotiation is made better by price. On a lot of my deals, I'm finding deals that didn't work conventionally for some reason for someone. I see something on the, like if I'm buying on the market, I see something there. I'm like, this would work if we structured this one clause in there. It's only going to work with terms, especially right now. A lot of people want the prices that they could have got 2 years ago before rates spiked. Like people still
think starting to go away now
a little bit, but I'm still seeing slowly a good deal of it where people are like, I just don't want to come off price that much. You're right. It's getting better, but there's still a lot of people who are like, God, I had an appraisal for $1 million more on this thing and it's just not worth it anymore. I'm just not willing to back off my price. I'm like, that is fine, but it's not going to work at your price and 7% interest. It works at 4% interest only for 10 years. I can write that if you're open to it, or you can continue to sit and that's fine too. I don't do the pressure thing. I ask for what I want, and if I get it and if I don't. One of the cool things about real estate, if you've ever driven anywhere ever, look out the window, real estate. The stuff's everywhere. There are deals everywhere, every market. I don't need to buy everything. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah. All right, guys. Now that we're coming up on the top of the hour, there's any clarifications? There are no stupid questions. Are there any parts of this? I really want to let you guys open up here. Is there anything that you guys didn't get that you want expanded on? Anything about the seller finance negotiation, the debt, the equity, anything in closing?
Hey, Christian.
Yeah.
So you choose debt over equity. So let's say you get into the, let's say you get debt for 50% of the deal. It sounds like your plan is to refinance out of it. How does the refinance work when you're only like a 50%, I guess, a partner of the deal? Or is it just you're not actually like splitting it that way? You just like in the eyes of the bank, you're just the sole owner and you're just refinancing out of that debt, like a hard money loan with the property?
That's often how I'll do it. That's how I'll actually structure a buyout. So the buyout will be, I am getting a bank loan and at close, buying out the property is part of how the partner is how the funds are distributed. So it's handled at title through escrow. They're bought out. I've done this on businesses too, by the way. I've bought my partner, Cody Davis. We've started several businesses together. I've done it for businesses where we do a structured buyout, an SBA loan. The SBA takes out the partner as part of the company refinancing or restructure.
Gotcha. And your partner isn't butthurt that they're not part of the deal anymore. You just give them that equity and you're like, hey, let's go on to the next one. And you got your rate back. And then you said that if you can't pay them back or if you can't refinance or something like that, then they just become equity partners. And they like that debt turns into equity in the deal.
So if it's debt, it's just debt. But I'll often back their debt with equity. So a lot of some of these deals, you can't further encumber the property. So I couldn't put them as a second there, but I can put a pledge agreement against my equity in an LLC, because that does not go against the title of the property. So I can absolutely say, look, this property owns this 38-plex. And if we default, while I can't put a loan against title on the 38, I can pledge my 40% equity in the LLC that owns it, made callable if we were ever to sell the LLC out of the property out of the LLC. You'd put structures around a lot of pretty much everything there's a workaround for, but we'll do a ton of that. I also have a lot of seller finance debt that's 15 to 30 years. A lot of these, we just never refinance and I'll just buy them out with cash from other exits from other deals. But I have the option to buy them out, which is the main thing.
The tiered option. If I was going to take anything away from this, I would take away that mistake. If you guys caught that in the beginning where they didn't have the tiered buyout, and that's what got them to have to pay the 100% on the first debt, getting those people bought out. So the tiered buyout, dude, every single part of this has been awesome. So as we close out, where can people find out more about what you do, who you are, where can they follow you?
So my group is on multifamilystrategy.com. I'm hopping to that call like literally in 30 seconds, but we do mentorship courses there. That's like my main platform. Everything that I do though, the information's free. And that is on Multifamily Strategy on YouTube. If you have questions for me personally, at Christian Osgood on Instagram, please follow me because I am far less than 1/10 of Brian's size on that platform and must grow. So I expect 41 more people. 40. I'm sure Hayden's in there already. So I'll see the rest of you guys there.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want. And I can only do that with your help. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to one or two friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.